Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-hosts...
Alpha Shard.
Mega Bears fan.
You heard that? Oh, crap, that's why.
I don't know if I would dislike the no crap moment, but
I had my speakers on. I'm sorry.
Oh,
like someone
okay.
Summoned a flight attendant.
Would you like an in-flight drink, sir? That'll be $50.
Welcome to episode 269. Cue a giggle from Dan. And with me today is Daniel Quick, Matt Jin, Makalua, Phil, me and team, Mega Bears fan, and myself, Alpha Shard.
You know, seeing as how this is Scott's 14th guest appearance on the show, I guess he feels like he can just rewrite how we do the introduction. It's a level of familiarity I'm not sure I'm
comfortable
with.
Remember. I need a script. You don't give me a script. I just go.
I'm like, 14th guy.
Bend over.
That's a little much, even for Civ.
Million.
Well, you could reference it in hundreds of thousands that way if you really wanted to, but it would be a weird-sounding number.
Okay, there were 10 hundreds of thousands.
There you go. Oh, I love it when you talk data. Keep going.
10 hundred thousand.
Anyway, on Steam stats, Civ 6 is now, in just 2 weeks, has bumped its way all the way up to third in the current player, like... There's a screenshot in the article that showed somebody took a snapshot that was the current players was only 53,000 at the time, but the peak had been 83,000 that day, which puts it in third on Steam's list, and that's even like above Team Fortress 2, which still has a lot of players.
Early in our recording day here, Civ 6 was at 6th with about 58,000, and it was at its peak, and Civilization 5 was in 12th at 38,000.
Yeah, on the screenshot in the article, Civ 5 was still doing pretty good.
One point where it was Civ 6 was third and Civ 5 was fourth.
Wow.
Yeah, well, there's still a lot of people who are probably going to wait for Christmas and everything, so you might see bigger numbers after that.
And I like how it's expressed as tops 1 million players. Didn't say 1 million sales, 1 million units sold or anything like that, just 1 million players. Which is, I mean, it's fine, it's still impressive, don't get me wrong, but I noticed the nuance.
Well, how would they not have purchased... I mean, if 1 million players would have to have bought the game to be playing it.
Well, birthdays and Christmas must be really boring for you, Scott, because, you know, no gifts.
Civilization also has the
troll.
Somebody still bought it.
So,
yeah, thank you.
Hypothetically, you could share the game with someone else's account and they can play it. I don't know if that gets counted into these sorts of metrics, but you can do that.
It could, and I mean, it doesn't even also break down the fact that, you know, Civilization VI is out for the Macintosh, which we'll be talking about shortly, but that just seems, since it's on Steam, that's just PC and Mac players, although I'm sure PC dominates that number considerably, just anecdotally.
So this will help ensure that we have more Civ to come, then, you know, that's really good numbers.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the very least, we know or ought to know that we're going to have at least 4 pieces of downloadable content, seeing as how that was tied to one of the pre-order options that, hey, you're just going to get this when the
release. There'll probably be expansions, too.
Well, yeah, there has to be a first expansion to put in all the stuff they took out of the game, right?
Yeah, man.
Well, that's probably not going to be a very big expansion, then, because there's actually quite a lot in this one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm kind of missing the kitchen sink, to be honest.
Well, the only thing that was removed was, like, the UN and diplomatic victory. And
throw it at
Hattie. They'll probably retool it and put it in an expansion.
Because Hattie's not.
It'll give them a chance to retool diplomacy or something, which it's not bad, but, you know.
It would be better.
Yeah. Before Civilization VI was released, the series was at reportedly 35 million units. And Civilization V representing 23% of that total units, say, 6 years after the release. And if you assume, and this is a very conservative, unrealistic assumption, but it just makes an interesting baseline. If you assume the last million, so 36 million, was only Civilization VI, then that's at least 2.7% of overall units in use acquired 2 weeks after release. So if that pace continues, it will be on track to surpass Civilization V. First impressions are important, and this is a very good start. This is a very good running start.
Oh, also keep in mind that Steam Spy thing just scrapes public profiles, so it doesn't actually show private profiles. And then they make an estimate. So
there is that as well, yes.
Numbers are not exactly exact.
I would have to imagine that somewhere on Steam or Firaxis or whoever has actual numbers.
I would hope 2K and Firaxis have actual numbers.
We would hope so.
Someone just walks up to the whiteboard and write down a number. That's our numbers, guys.
It's the largest number I could articulate today, so.
Well, no, we're just talking about quote-unquote actual numbers. And like. Okay.
It's like, excuse me, is that the number of units that have been acquired, or is that how many hours of productivity have been lost this week? Well.
Yeah.
Probably both. Brent Hillier on VG247 says, quote, "It's a tremendous achievement and a significant milestone for any game, let alone one restricted to PC and Mac with no, you know, exploding heads," unquote. No exploding heads. Well, it's abstracted. I'm sure there are exploding heads in Civilization VI. We just don't see it in any particular detail.
Yeah, you don't see the camera view when Chompin gets a bullet in his head in that plane. No exploding head, but you just assume that he got hit in the head when the bullets went through the canopy of his plane.
Yes, we apologize for the spoiler.
Everybody should have seen that by now.
Headshot.
Everyone should have seen that coming except for Sean Bean, apparently. Brenna Hillier also describes Civilization V as the perennial favorite. Oh, man, imagine saying that 6 years ago. So, yay sales. 2K and Firaxis took to Facebook to tweet a photo of them acknowledging this. Congratulations, 2K and Firaxis.
They sold games? What?
Yeah, yeah. So, I expect a thank you card in the mail. And you only have 1 million to send. Go, go, go. Civilization VI released on the Mac, and Linux a possibility, to which at Babbling Birkin on Twitter said, "Come on, I just got to a birthday party. Now I'll have to bail on my loved ones. Worth it." A few days on October 24th after the PC release, and it should be noted that in terms of cross-platform multiplayer, that is not available yet. Aspire says it won't be available until after the 60-day patch. So, 60-day patch confirmed, apparently. Yeah. And,
Is a 30-day patch confirmed?
Let's not extrapolate here. Maybe, but we definitely have a 60-day patch, apparently, according to Aspire. Although that could just be for the Mac version and the PC version, so it's not too bad. Who knows? And then as far as the Linux part goes, that was actually more interesting, the chain of events. On the FAQ page for Civilization VI on Aspire's website, wanted to address a section of our fans that may have felt left out recently. "Dear Linux users, we haven't forgotten about you." This is also tweeted as well in part. "Linux is still being investigated as a project. We hope to have clarity in coming months on if a viable version of Civ 6 can make it to Linux, and we will let you know as soon as possible as we have more information. The Mac port uses Metal, and the Windows version DirectX 12, so there's some technical reasons there and behind there, questioning in terms of the viability of that. It's probably not so much a question of if, although there is that, as opposed to how long is it going to take, how much is it going to cost, how many people, what are sales projections, other things we could do being with resource, blah, 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 blah. However, in the Linux community, congregated on Reddit, folks got together to create a delivery of cookies." Yes, I said cookies, "to motivate Aspire to support Linux's Civ 6 port. They came from Tiff's Treats in Austin, Texas, USA. Aspire actually tweeted, we received this, and the message that they received said, for all the great ports Linux users have already loved, and some inspiration to see if you can get it going in Civ 6 too. Keep up all the great work, we really appreciate it," unquote. To which Aspire responded, "Thank you, you lovely Linux people. The guilt trip has been accepted. Hashtag nom nom nom." Based on the photo, chocolate chip was one of the least the two cookies that were included. No word on the number of cookies provided. I don't have any idea how big Aspire is. Aspire is also located in Austin. According to the FAQ section on Tiff Treat's website, by the way, all the cookies were infused with gluten, so Mackie can sigh some relief.
Ooh.
And we previously reported on Aspire porting Civilization V, its two expansions, and Civilization Beyond Earth, but not the Rising Tide expansion to Linux. The Aspire goes back even farther in the Civilization lineage of porting over to Macintosh, including not just Civilization 4, but also Civilization 3. And Alpha Centauri and Alien Crossfire 2 for those even count. So, good to know that the cross-platform multiplayer is coming soon. It's planned. It's not available in release, but that's okay. I mean, Mac players can just multiplayer with themselves, and PC players can multiplayer with themselves. And other people. That sounded awkward.
It's a shame you can't blind throw that either. The ability to play Windows games on Linux is what that is. It does not work because of the DirectX thing.
As we know on the panel, who uses Linux, Phil, if port for Civilization VI came out for Linux, would you play that instead of, or perhaps just in addition to, the Windows version? If you knew that there was also the cross-platform multiplayer component.
Whichever OS I happen to have up at the time, I'd probably just use that. They're pretty similar once you get them going, honestly. It doesn't really matter. Compatibility stuff with the newer versions of DirectX is behind in both Mac and Linux, as far as I'm aware. So it's not as easy as you would like it to be. Like, for example, I can play something like Worms Armageddon, which is really old, or even something as new as Europa Universalis 4 in Windows version on Linux using Wine. But if you have to run DirectX 11 or 12, then it doesn't. There's no working version of that. So you can't do it with something like Overwatch, for example. It's just no way right now.
And then, of course, there's always the questions of once it's available for Linux, will it be kept up to date in pace with the PC and or Mac versions? Not that we know anything about that in Skype, for example. No, we wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Overwatch, but hey, guess what? It's one of the many games that Team Liquid plays. So we've had eSports for a long time, and now Civilization is apparently going to start being part of it, which is kind of, I'm trying to think about it, because most of the other things that are played have short matches and things like that. I'm thinking of a really long JD level game, and I'm going, how is that going to entertain people? I mean, eSports tournaments and things haven't been held, but...
Well, eSports aren't usually against the AI, right?
So no, this would be two human players, but...
Yeah, we're talking competitive, but even then... You have a lot of hurdles to making a Civ game viable in any competitive setting. It isn't just the length, although it matters too. You will need pre-doctored maps in relatively even Civ picks, or else you wind up with spawn wins or losses, which, I mean, if you have a competitive game, you really don't want to have somebody win or lose on spawn.
Yeah.
It's going to end up like within the StarCraft tournaments, where there's going to be a rotation set of tournament maps.
Yeah, they'll have to. They'll have to find some seeds that work and say, okay, these are the ones we'll use. Or Firaxis has to create some maps specifically to allow for that. But there's other problems, like other mechanics in the game that aren't necessarily competitive friendly. Like, how much of the map defines your early Eurekas?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
And how much of the map defines your production capabilities? One person gets a bunch of hills. There's also barbs, but multiplayer people can just turn those off if they really need to. Although that will start causing problems.
Yeah, they've really kind of been ironed into the Eureka system and early progression, more so than even Civ 5.
Yep. There's a fair amount that would need to be done before it would be eSport ready.
So this eSports, this is the same one that has StarCraft 2 competitions in there?
Yeah.
Well, eSports is just a label for any game that's played competitively online now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or at least competitively online and has a big enough base to be considered worth throwing advertising money at for tournaments. There's that small detail of making money off of it.
Team Liquid, based in the Netherlands, so it was founded in 2001. We mentioned StarCraft, Overwatch was mentioned, and also other titles including Halo and Super Smash Brothers. So with Civilization VI, it's going to become only the second strategy title after StarCraft II to join the lineup, and the first turn-based one. So it was already mentioned.
StarCraft II was the one that started the lineup, so.
Yeah.
Well, StarCraft, more generally, I guess.
The eSports has been around with StarCraft for many years now.
Yep.
According to the announcement, Civilization provides the perfect platform for players to showcase their gaming intellect, and we feel that Firaxis is on the cusp of bringing the franchise to a competitive esports level, unquote. And I'm thinking...
Turn time?
Well, I'm also thinking, what specifically does Firaxis have to do with this? There's been no indication. I mean, there's certainly no barriers that Firaxis has put up, but there's been nothing from Firaxis or publisher 2K about, we're thinking about this in terms of esports, and given the issues that have already been identified, you might say... In practice, there seems to be a lot of obstacles to this, to quote-unquote elevate it to what we consider in terms of esports.
I would really hope 2K would not look at Civ and go, let's make that an esport, because...
Yeah. as someone who was a very avid Madden player back in the days when Madden was actually trying to emulate football and not try to just be the Madden game, I would be very concerned about 2K and Firaxis looking at Civ as being an online esports game, because that could lead to severe compromises in the single-player experience and AI development and all kinds of other stuff.
What day was that, by the way? What back in day was that? Like, an ancient time?
I was talking about going all the way back to, like, the PlayStation 2, back when Madden was actually...
Oh, I think you have to go earlier than that, even.
Before EA bought it.
That was where it was always an EA game, but that was where it jumped the ship. But back when you still had the competition in the marketplace and the NFL didn't have its hands so thoroughly in the game. But now it's so much of the focus is just on the online multiplayer that the single player experience sometimes really suffers. And I really do not want to see the same thing happen to Civ.
As someone who's actually played this sport, and I've been ranked for a number of years. Now I don't play it as frequently, so I'm not ranked presently. But man, for over a decade now, high-level play has been centered around your knowledge of the real game in addition to your knowledge of the things that work in Madden the way they don't in real life. It's not even close to realistic, and it never has been.
The fact that the game is balanced around playing, like, six-minute quarters and stuff like that, like, really negates a lot of the strategy involving, like, running the ball and playing good defense. It just makes certain styles of play completely infeasible.
Yeah, and that could easily happen in Civ as well if you try to go esports scene and try to always have perfectly balanced maps all the time. And
right, and 30-minute play time.
You can lose something there, and you almost certainly would.
Civ is not an RTS, and I think it's very difficult to make it a competitive game that people want to watch when you have turn-based and everybody's taking their time with these turns, and you don't want the single player to get changed into something else that it, you know, Civ is not. And
single player would only get changed if they started messing with mechanics.
Yeah.
There's tons of stuff they can do on the multiplayer side without messing mechanics.
But they could. They could very easily justify messing with mechanics in order to make it more competitive, so to speak. I can envision that happening.
Well, I wouldn't mind mechanics changes to work on the multiplayer level and then just make the AI, you know, better to deal with those mechanic changes, because then...
Yes, I've long been an advocate of that, so that, like, the AI doesn't game throw. Their actions are plausible.
Dumb stuff. Or write mechanics just because the AI can't handle a better version of it.
Yeah.
Well, the person who led this announcement, the co-chief executive officer and co-owner of Team Liquid, Liquid 112, Stephen R. Hansett, he says that we'll be launching a tournament soon, and the revitalization of the Civ players and Civ Fanatic communities will be a great start to what will become of the scene, unquote. I'm not certain revitalization is necessary for one or both of those, but rather a continuation of their involvement with Civilization and the idea that Civilization VI, now being an esport in addition to the competitive nature that we already have from Civilization Players League to No Quitters to Giant Multiplayer Robot and a number of other such services. I mean, this announcement, I'm mostly skeptical. I'm intrigued by the notion. And certainly when you think of esports, you don't just want to say, oh, well, we're going to try to copy and paste from Halo into Civilization VI, and then we'll have a successful formula because that's what esports looks like in Halo, and so that's what it should look like in Civ. Or perhaps a better comparison, we'll just take what's good with StarCraft and we'll try to apply that to Civilization VI. There's going to be some unique elements to it, but when I think of esports, in addition to the play, I think of people watching. And some people question, well, who's going to sit there and watch that? And part of my response would be, have you seen Let's Plays?
Color commentary would just be silly, though.
Well, it is funny anyway, though.
It's silly anyway, come on.
Yeah.
If you watch quote-unquote color commentary in something like StarCraft, I wouldn't exactly say Civ has a huge bar to climb to reach. But, like, with that kind of stuff, I think, you know, they're going to have to depend on some editing. If you're talking about long games and you don't modify the mechanics so that the game can play quickly, then you're just going to have post-playthrough broadcasts, in essence.
In a lot of cases, like, IGN had an entire Twitch channel based around getting post-playback, so...
Yeah.
If they take the ongoing commentary part of it that are in other esports, I think it's going to become not just the quality of the questions of the play, but also the ability for people to entertain in the commentary when there really isn't anything necessarily interesting going on, which really kind of applies to almost anything. But in something like Civ, which is maybe, air quotes, maybe not as fast-paced as, say, a StarCraft or a Halo, that is going to be a challenge, which is probably also where the editing might come into play,
Oh, my God, he settled his 15th city in a row. Now what is he doing?
So it sounds like you're saying first-person camera confirmed for Civ 6 online version, right?
Yeah.
No.
Well, Liquid 112 also does say an announcement that what really thrills me is the evidence that Civilization 6 is going to be competitive and will be here to stay, even with any dramatic changes to the teaming structure that multiplayer players have grown used to be playing with, unquote. And, of course, that elicited some responses on the Team Liquid forums that are like, wait, people play this competitively? I had no idea Civ even had a competitive side. Or my favorite comment was, didn't know Civ was still a thing.
As opposed to, I had no idea StarCraft had a single-player mode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, really, at this point, it doesn't, because they just kind of gave up on it. Actually, probably one of the bigger things for why it wouldn't be a competitive game is, well, Firaxis does love to patch, but it takes time to patch. Game-throwing bugs and other such silliness would have to get slaughtered at a much faster pace for this to be truly competitive. Now, granted, modding works on that front, because whatever quote-unquote esports league could just keep a mod rolling and make changes, but stuff like, you know, delete units, get money, or chop forests and stuff outside of your territory, being like, these are the things you should do always. Yeah. Stuff like that. Right now, not very good on competition.
No, I definitely see a modding element to this, because the Civilization players, the Fruity mod or something like that, where that's what you have to run in order to participate with Civilization VI in Civ players. So we're assuming, maybe we're just assuming, and that's a problem, I don't know, that Team Liquid is going to do something comparable to that in the context of esports.
Yeah, well, they'd have to.
If they wanted to be successful, yes, otherwise. You know,
yeah, it makes up for
it. Unless 2K goes, yeah, let's get behind this, throw tons of money at, like, weekly patches.
Oh, there's the other side. Yeah, no one kind of pays attention to this, and then this takes off, and lots of money being generated. Then 2K says, "So about our game license?"
Yeah. Well, no, they'll bring that up the moment anything happens.
Financially, yes.
Yep.
But I guess the next date to watch for is November 19th, because according to the press release, quote, Team Liquid will begin hosting a series of grueling tournaments in an attempt to find the most exceptional players in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess we will have to wait and see. It's like, we want to have this competitive league, but I guess we need some players. So
yeah, we need
find
players
out
that'll actually be competitive.
That's the first step.
Step one, get players.
Yeah. Step two, make sure game's interesting enough. Step three, who cares?
Question mark,
Step
question
four,
mark, question
funny.
Mark. Yeah, there you go.
The fact that Liquid 112, again, the co-CEO and co-founder, said that I really started getting interested in competitive gameplay by playing Civilization 4, and then I was too busy making Team Liquid when Civilization 5 came out, and now here comes Civilization 6, and here's an opportunity to infuse that. I guess perhaps might leave this to John Canuck's Soldier Ryder, who is the owner and operator of Civ Players, and he responded on CFC to this announcement, which it does seem to be a brave new world. Hard to say where this will go or if it will catch on, but if there is value in it, Civ Players, as it always has, promote what is good for the MP community, unquote, and I think that's right embedded in that statement, if there is value in it. It is certainly ambitious, and their confidence level is high. Some might even say some of the references are a little arrogant in there, but they're certainly going for it.
Well, hey, I mean, as said on Beyond the Monument with Connect Soldier on, multiplayer works, to start with.
Yeah.
And there's some,
what a fun,
you know,
surprise.
And there's some online mode, and so we've got at least, what, 4 or 5 years worth of development?
I'm sorry, I was just reading in between the lines of that. It's like, so, multiplayer works. We want to break it. Esports.
Yeah. I mean, the concept of it is fine. Hey, why not? Multiplayer community kind of got owned when it came to Civ 5, so it'll be nice that there will be a multiplayer community that can do stuff in Civ 6 right from the beginning. So, hey, you never know. At the very least, it might just generate interest in multiplayer Civ 6 that, sure, it might not go full-on esports, but it could have a lot more multiplayer interest.
Speaking of getting boned, Civilization Online going offline in December.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Speaking of boning... At least we don't have to look at that Egyptian character anymore.
Well, I'm sure that image will stay forever cherished in Google Images. But in any event, forever cherished. So,
yes, cherished.
So on the 2nd of November, the Civilization Online Premium Shop login character information service ended for Civilization Online, which was this massively multiplayer online role-playing game from XL Games using the Civilization license that started in South Korea and ends its experiment, at least in the current iteration in South Korea, not expanding to most other parts of Asia and the rest of the world, because there were a couple of other regions that managed to get it after South Korea.
But China had it already.
Yes, but according to the official announcement, and this is a translation, thank you, Google, after careful consideration...
Oh, God, no. No.
Well, it's based on the translation. After careful consideration, we have made a decision to terminate Civilization Online services on December 7th, 2016. On behalf of the development team, thank you, and we will once again focus on supplementing the gameplay, working hard to make a potential Civilization Online. The translation actually said we made an unacceptable decision to terminate the service, which...
Nice.
I found amusing. We would like to thank you for your valuable feedback and sincerely thank you for your interest. Look forward to seeing you again in Civilization Online. So the notion is, in other words, Civilization Online 1.0, at the very least, is going offline in December, and it has just been under a year that it has been available out of the closed beta phase. So on the 7th of December, the service is over, the mobile app, it ends. It says, please refer to the information provided to you so you do not have to worry about using the game. I also like that translation. It's like, well, you're not going to have to worry about using the game when you can no longer play the game because it no longer exists. So, Civilization Online joins Civilization World, the Facebook-specific version, where this just kind of goes back to any of those games that are online only and your data and your gameplay experience is residing on a server, not your local computer, that when it gets canceled, it gets canceled.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, that does suck.
Well, it's a subscription-based service, so it's not like you paid for the game, right?
That's right, so hopefully people recognize that.
Aside from your time investment,
you paid for the subscription, but that doesn't guarantee for life. Because,
no, that just guarantees for the duration of that subscription. Yeah, it's time-sensitive.
Just guarantees access as long as the game's around.
And now it's not, so...
Seeing as how we talked about it in the past when it was being developed and then it was released, we will now conclude, for now, the Civilization Online story. So I guess if you want Civilization Online, that's what Civilization 6, for example, is. It's Civilization Online, just not exclusively.
There's a Dev MP video. It's on YouTube.
Wow, that's so enthusiastic.
I know, right?
So well,
in my defense, for the first time since Civ 6 dropped, when I finally got my computer working on Windows yesterday, I was able to actually play Civ 6. So I'm not too big on watching other people play the game. And if I am, I'm like watching to learn, which would not be this video in particular. So I don't know. Well, come on. The devs don't try to optimize deity strats or something.
They don't know how to play their own game.
Well, that's not what they're off the showcase either, so...
Exactly, yes. It doesn't say that Civ 6 developer plays multiplayer well.
I'm not trying to point my finger at the dead and be like, you know how to play this game, because they still know how to play better than me, at least for the moment. But at the same time, that would not be my first pick of somewhere to go to learn how to play it at a high level. It's just history of any game ever when you're comparing, like, strong players versus developer showcases. Gee, I wonder which one has higher skill level based on the last 10 years of gameplay footage I've seen. Well, obviously, the players.
The devs played MP and they sucked at it.
Yay!
And worth pointing out that the perspective that we are seeing in part is lead designer Ed Beach alongside fellow Phyraxian Pete Murray. At one point, Ed said...
Oh, this is where they played the scenario, right?
Yeah. Okay. Said, quote, that there were two main goals for multiplayer. To make it so that the sessions would be shorter and that we could get meaningful victories accomplished in those shorter session games, unquote. Well, meaningful victories... I just think about, like, our in-house rules in Turncast, you know, for better or worse.
What's meaningful, exactly? Like,
yeah.
You're not going to win a Nobel Prize, even if you win, like, 60 of these multiplayer games in a row. So I guess it just depends on what you consider to be meaningful.
Well, until it goes into esports and then you win $1 million.
Okay.
That would be meaningful.
But I don't think there's any implication that you get a cash prize for victory in these MP games just yet, at least not just because the developers made it that way.
My favorite part of the video was near the beginning, and there's been more than about 39,000 views of this since it was released on the 22nd of October. Of course, in multiplayer, when you're setting up a game, by default, it tells you the name of the game based on a Steam handle, and we see a Firaxis Steam handle. It's just like, they promised us multiplayer, and they did release a multiplayer video one day after the game was released. Yep. You guys wanted more details, here you go. Yep, lasts nearly 2 hours, if you watch the entire thing, if you so choose.
If you feel like it.
Yeah, I mean, if you enjoy it, more power to you, watch it.
Yeah, well, basically, they didn't show a normal multiplayer game. They showed one of the scenarios.
Yeah.
Which, in the context of talking about it, is a nice thing. There's three scenarios, they're all mods at the same time, and they're all multiplayer modded scenarios. That, in and of itself, says a lot, given Civ 5 mods, multiplayer, yada, 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 scenarios. All these things that were not multiplayer. So.
Yeah, let alone possible, let alone friendly, and this is intended for multiplayer. It's like, what? But, hey, if you have no friends to play with, or other people to play with, you could just load it as a multiplayer game as yourself and go for it. Just like as with before, you can multiplayer with yourself. Mm-hmm. That might be part of the reason why they showed this off in the video. It's just like, see, we haven't just been talking about it. We've actually been doing it, and here it is.
Yeah.
Most of the comments about the gameplay were... not positive.
In other words, they got hard troll for not being so great at their game, Dan.
Yeah, and if you're thinking, not so great at the game, speaking of not so great at the game, next video, or series of videos.
Okay, I guess I'll say it. They let the AI play the game and it sucked. Moving on.
This might have been better if the video was sped up.
There's the surprise. Yes. Question mark.
Yeah, no, they decided to set up an AI battle royale because, you know, they're totally doing that now because of Reddit.
All
Reddit's
fault. Yeah, I was going to say that's where I saw it first, and the Reddit one's actually at least interesting.
Yeah, so they just let it happen, and the AI did very, very little until one tripped over a culture victory. Yeah.
Yep, on turn 475.
Oh my gosh.
After, it's a five-part series where
what
each video
speed?
About,
what game speed?
It was standard speed.
Wow. Okay.
It was also only on King, I think?
Yes, it was on King as well. That's correct. And it was Continents. If you want to see the gameplay footage actually start, go to the 30-minute mark of the first video because you have a 30-minute pre-show with...
Oh my God. Never let them do that again. That was the worst part about that whole thing.
Yeah, that... Oh, that could have used some editing. That introduction might have been good for about 5 minutes.
Like, delete all of it.
It was Dave Hinkle, the 2K community manager for Civilization, and Andrew Dutra, who I'd never heard of before, quite honestly. He's an associate producer at 2K, and specifically one of the two associate producers for Civilization VI. But then after that, we see Ed Beach again and Pete Murray, and then the second part brings on Andrew Garrett, the lead AI programmer at Firaxis, takes over from Ed, and then taking over from Andrew. And the third part is Anton Stranger, gameplay designer. That commentary was more interesting. Honestly, my biggest criticism of watching it itself was when the AI is processing its turns and it's fast-forwarding across the map. And this is just part like an encoding issue or something. Like, the pixelation is very noticeable. And that came up again and again and again and again. But once it actually stopped moving at breakneck speed, you could see what was going on. Of course, in a single turn, there are eight civilizations that are taking their turn. So what was it, like a standard size map as well? So there's a lot going on, especially as the game goes on. And at the end, Pete says, I know you think we rigged this so that so-and-so would win, but no, we had no idea.
Right, because I think it was the Aztecs, right? On.
Yes. It featured the Aztecs, Brazil, England, Greece, Japan, Rome, Russia, and Spain. And which version of Greece was it? Was it Gorgo?
It was Gorgo.
It was Gorgo? Okay.
But she didn't do any Gorgoing. And then, yeah, they had silly stuff like the Roman AI built a bunch of units and then never bothered killing anything.
Solid.
It looked like the AIs were building cities all over the place, like even more all over the place than usual.
Yeah, you know, we used to get on the Civ doing those, like, ice cities and things, and we had, in multiplayer the past couple of weeks, we have seen the AI want to put them into stupidest places. It's just like, seriously, like, game we played last week, they came up near me and were putting one up into completely, you know, not even tundra, complete ice. There was no food around except for one tiny little pod of crabs up in this little Arctic locked lake because there was some copper luxury up there.
Right, it's like, oh, there's one bonus resource, we must settle there, even though there's not enough room to build any districts, and we're not going to have any food.
And
not going to be able to build districts is just crazy. Like, at least put a city where you can build districts.
Yeah, for a city that's only going to get them the resource and then be a net drain on their civ. What the hell?
Will it be with difficulty bonuses, though? Just out of curiosity.
Maybe.
Because one of those things where on high difficulty, sometimes the AI is given enough stuff where basically any city it can possibly settle is a net positive, in theory. And as a player, you might do that too if you had such bonuses.
Well, I think your yields are percent increased, but you have to have yields in the first place.
Right? Yeah, there you go. You have to have your, that place would not have had yields.
Directly percent increased, then okay.
But yeah, it sucks. Who knew?
Who knew, indeed.
Multiplayer work, by the way.
There's entertainment value in the AI Battle Royale, and the commentary is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they did commentary on what was going where, and then yada, yada, yada. And the fact that it was a very, very long stream, it eventually just took breaks and just let the game go by itself for a while.
Yeah.
it also showed that the AI was horribly unfocused for victory. A few too many of them made it, you know, space race victory, and then it's like, I don't feel like it.
I find that rather surprising that the AI never declared on each other then. I mean,
they did declare on each other. They just
because you're saying nothing happened, and like, well, then they did fight.
They just didn't anything with it.
Yes, they tried to explain at one point that they'd use joint wars against each other, and then both AIs would just kind of sit back and wait for the other one to start, and then make peace when neither of them ended up fighting. actually bothered to do that.
I really think they should have it where the AIs will wipe each other out on occasion, at least. Maybe not every game, but at least occasionally have Montezuma take out a civ or two.
Well, if they declare a war, they should at least try to send units over to fight the war.
A novel concept.
Yeah, and when your enemy is, like, super weak, you don't just leave it and then not take anything.
I think just in general, the AI needs to be a little bit more focused.
The diplomacy side of things should probably have some more layered control over war decks. Like, we're super friendly! Stab you in the face.
Well, right, and more just kind of long-term
just to conserve resources decently, that should be better.
Yeah.
I have the situations where they're sending me trade routes and suddenly they're declaring war, and it's like you're just killing all of your own trade routes.
You don't kill the trade route.
But they don't have anything to send them to now. I've had that happen even in games where I'm basically the only trade partner for them, and they're
just want to trade internally instead.
Yeah.
Well, right, I know, but it's still...
Just don't send trade routes and then declare war and target me.
Even though they can be automatically re-signed, it does seem like, well, why didn't you just do that internally from the beginning when you were going to declare on me a few turns after the trade route? Especially as an outward glance, it's like, oh yeah, they're not going to go after me. They send me a trade route. This is good news. Right. Or they're like unlikely to send me a trade route because I have an indication they might not be going well, but at least as compared to everyone else, they don't hate me as much as someone else because they're sending me a trade route. And wait, they just declared on me, pardon?
Yeah, right. One turn, they're friendly enough to send me a trade route. Three turns later, suddenly I'm the scourge of the earth. What?
Yeah, also, keep in mind that there is some glimpse of strategy in there. If they send you a trade route, then that means they build a road for you.
Although when they declare war before the route is completed, and therefore the road is completed. That was premature.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. It's just the various parts of the AIs don't necessarily mesh well together. And that needs some work. The agenda items are all about the diplomacy side, getting them to be friendly and allies or other such things like that. So if you do it well, you can get friends and allies. It just allows for them to not be standard box, put in these inputs, get that output for every single AI, especially with the hidden agenda being random. And because a lot of the agendas are conflicting with each other, it also helps provide that you're not going to be having like a kumbaya world constantly. You're going to have to pick and choose friends. Or just kill them all.
Just kill them all. That's the right answer.
Yeah, especially when they all start with that -3 first impressions thing.
Yeah, sometimes it's higher.
We learned the great mistake, right, in the previous game. So now we don't have to think about world peace. We know that that's the mistake, with thinking that there could be.
I just like to imagine suddenly went magically silent when that game was referenced. I'm totally surprised.
Yeah, whoops, I'd forgotten that he didn't enjoy the experience. Whoops.
Well, it depends on your definition of enjoy. and experience.
And your definition of experience.
It's an experience, all right.
That's true.
Oh, speaking of experiences.
Have you been experienced?
25 years of it, apparently. Is an interview with Sid Meier regarding, well, again, about Civ and how it's changed over the years.
One thing has remained the same. One person has always been there. I am, of course, talking about the man with his name on the box, Mr. Sid Meier, the original designer of Civilization, and the one person to talk to about the history of this incredible strategy series.
You know, it kind of makes me wonder, 25 years on, when, of course, it's identified early on, with the exception of the original Civilization, when, of course, it wasn't called Civilization 1, it was just Civilization, and then the Civilization Revolution offshoot, Sid wasn't leading the design. I wonder how many people who are playing Civilization right now, and they wonder, who this Sid Meier guy is, and why is his name on it?
They probably just assume he, like, made the game, because, you know, it's just Sid Meier, so...
Or maybe they think the game is based on a book, and Sid Meier wrote the book.
Oh, that could be.
Oh, it's based on his civilization. Oh.
Yeah. Well, have you seen that Civ 2 manual back in the day? It's kind of true. That thing was pretty thick.
I still have mine. Yeah, I really like that manual. It was nice to have those things, and we don't get those in games anymore. But I enjoyed this video because I think, at least for me, he said some things that I had always wondered about. Because he brought up, well, we even thought about what if we started in the Stone Age for Civilization, or if we moved into the future with it. And I've always wanted that kind of concept, either way, or both even. But he was very focused on not overwhelming the player with too many concepts in the game.
A Civ every year would have been a little bit too much. But by, pacing it out and making sure we had gotten all the feedback from the community and new ideas that we had time to test out and experiment with, also, looking at the new technology, multiplayer. The original Civ was on floppy disks, and then we had, CD-ROMs, and now we have digital distribution. So kind of being able to fold a lot of that new technology into Civ also, I think, kept it fresh and new each time there was a new game.
It informed me more on the decision process that he went through for at least the first two games it seemed like he was involved in.
We didn't know. We didn't know that we were doing the impossible, so we just went ahead and did it. So certainly looking back, things have changed a lot. I represent kind of the historical knowledge of Civ, of things we've tried and didn't work out. So I can kind of perhaps provide a little of that perspective as we look at a new game.
At the very end, I think, was something I really liked, where he was talking about what the definition of civilization is to him.
I'd like it to be a game where, at the end of a game, you look back to your starting point and you feel that there's an incredible distance between where you started and where you ended up, that you've gone on this really interesting journey. That, to me, is the feel of civilization, is that, wow, I started with that one little city, and all this stuff happened, and it's unique to me. This story will never be told again, and I want to go back and do another one and see what the next story is. An epic adventure is what we're trying to create with the Civ experience, and, everything else is a mechanic and a feature and an asset. We want you to kind of leave the real world and live in our world for a while.
I really agreed with that.
An interesting journey, and I think extending to that, you can either keep it to yourself, or you can share it through written descriptions, screenshots, video, etc. But if you want, it can just be about you and your choices, good or bad. You didn't mention probably all the bunch of the frickin' reloading saves in single player there. Yeah. I call that just the alternate reality versions of your game.
Or little nightmares. Oh, they had a nightmare, they woke up and were back a few turns.
And I do so far feel like Civ 6 is probably the best and fullest realization of that telling a story idea, just in the way that the geography plays such a bigger role in how you approach the game and how your civilization develops.
He also, in talking about the rule of thirds, which we've talked about before and identified on the show before, a third you're going to keep, a third you're going to change, and a third is going to be new when you go from one civilization iteration to another. He here, Sid, specifically defined new as things not in the first or second civilization. So he identified specifically religion, espionage, and modding as examples of. But that was the first time I ever heard that that's what their definition of new was in the context of thirds.
I think that's one of the things in Civ 2, actually, referencing Civ 2 at least, when he said, oh, there's this new Windows and we're going to put Civ in Windows now because it used to be DOS and make it easier for people to modify the game themselves. Because I remember in Civ 2, you get the, like, this unit's graphic, and there's, like, unused units, and you can import that unit that's on the graphic there, and it's, like, all ready for you to go, and you can customize it any way you want. I thought that was a lot of fun, too.
Also, you see, kids, there was this thing called DOS, and...
Also, I kind of got the impression that when he was talking about the one-thirds thing, that when he referred to things that weren't in Civ 2, I think the reason for that was because he was talking about they kind of identified that paradigm with Civ 3, so that was when they started the one-third rule, so that might have been what he meant by new things or things that weren't in Civ 1 and Civ 2.
Well, maybe once they got to Civilization 3, they identified what they were doing as the third and the third and the third. They never really labeled it before.
Right.
So maybe that's why he uses that as a basis. So yeah, going forward, when they're specifically identifying what's new, that started with Civilization 3. So yeah, that's consistent there. Things not done in the first or second Civ. Because Sid kept saying, and he said before, we really had no idea what we were doing. Eventually they realize, boy, we're kind of onto the third Civ now. We must be doing something right. I kind of got the notion, it's probably a good idea if we know what we're doing correctly, so we purposely strive towards it rather than just incidentally lightning striking again or striking gold again, which is probably a good thing. Otherwise, we might not be having this conversation right now.
Very true.
Although, I do have to say, and I smiled a little bit when you were quoting Sid about starting in the Stone Age, Scott.
Yeah.
Sid was talking about, well, what is the scope of civilization? And he talked about the future, but he said...
What about starting in the Stone Age, you know, with dinosaurs?
And I'm like, Sid, there's no scientific basis. I think he's also got the dinosaur game he canceled on the brain there. I think that was a little slip into that. I was expecting him to talk about it next, but no, he kept it to Civ.
I think it was wasn't there a dinosaur scenario in the Fantastic Worlds expansion for Civ 2? Or something?
There may very well have been. I don't remember specifically. I know there were scenarios in Fantastic Worlds, but that's about the extent of it. And actually, as an aside, Civilization VI is the first Civ game that has made me pay attention to scenarios. Really. And to play with it more than just, oh, I loaded the scenario, especially in Civilization V, if I load this, can I get an achievement unlocked for it and then never pay attention to it again? But with Civilization VI, I actually want to play some of these scenarios from time to time. Otherwise... what his role is at Firaxis today, because he is the director of creative development, although that specifically isn't mentioned in the interview. And the interviewer from Eurogamer, Chris Brad, is like, so what do you do? I play the game. The first response. Yes. We would hope so, sir.
I'm happy to kind of turn it over to the design team. I mean, it's got to be somebody's vision. It's my original ideas are still in there, but, you know, the design team kind of takes and adds their thing to it. So on a day-to-day, you know, I'm not involved. I'm around and kind of aware of how things are going, but I have some other fun things to work on.
Oh, how very coy of you. He means trolling the people developing XCOM. I think that's what that means. Oh, okay. That sounds like fun.
I think he's kind of there as an advisory role now.
For the most part, although there are some people at Firaxis who have been with Firaxis from the beginning, which, by the way, is 20 years old. This year in 2016. But there's also, of course, the original Civilization and Civilization 2 developed at Microprose that he's able to bring that with him, that history. I'm pretty certain he's the only employee at Firaxis that can say, I go back to the original Civilization. So yeah, you could say, like, Sid's the old man of the company, but of course no one would actually say
given that. He was the one who wrote the original Civilization, and mostly by himself.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. Back in the day when that was a thing, just like with Civilization 2,
it would be really hard.
Brian Reynolds doing almost everything. Not as much of the almost everything that Sid did, but still, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the, you ever going to be done with Sid? That's like, we don't ask questions we don't necessarily want answers to, sir.
We certainly appreciate the opportunity we've had to do this and hope it continues. It's really the community that supported us and their enthusiasm, their support, their ideas. We don't see a reason why we can't go into the future, but, you know, we're not taking that for granted. I think each Civ has to kind of prove itself and has to bring something new and has to be something that our fans want to play, but perhaps also introduce itself to some new players. So we're working to make that happen, but there's no guarantees.
So in translation and business speak, we need to make money, which is completely fair. I mean, that's,
well, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, they're not just there for
you
doing it.
Don't last
very
long. Don't.
Keep buying it. We'll keep making it.
I think with the first article we had, I think we're good to go for at least another Civ.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
unless the, you know, two or three or whatever expansions for Civ 6 end up tanking. But I don't think that's going to happen, because Civ has a pretty good track record of making good expansions. I think, anyway.
And patching as well.
Now that that's a thing.
There's been a good balance between new features and the kind of core gameplay. There's been, again, a support for the community. I think that not every feature is loved by everybody, but they're done in a way that people can have a discussion about it and can understand the, you know, the pros and cons and the reasons behind it. And I think part of what gives us longevity is that there are things to talk about. There are interesting things to discuss and consider and play again and try a different strategy that somebody else has talked about. So that richness, I think, has kept it alive, and I think we'll continue to keep it going.
The entirety, although I'm not sure if it's really the entirety, of the Civ 6 soundtrack is online, on YouTube's even, so you can go listen to the whole thing, though it's not split up where you can jump around, so you kind of have to either listen to it all or...
You also have the soundtrack, everyone has the soundtrack in their local files. If you go to the game and say, check out your local files, you can go right to where the soundtrack is and listen to whatever song you feel like.
Now, very interestingly, the theme for the main menu is not part of the...
You have to go to Chris Tin's website for that.
Yep. So he might have made the theme, but apparently he didn't sign over the rights to use it.
I think that's the same thing with Baba Yetu. You also have to buy it from his website.
Well, that one was on the Civ 4 soundtrack.
Yeah. I think back in the day, Praxis had more, hey, you're making a theme for us. We own it. And he's like, eh, okay. Oh, wait, that one went really good. Next time, we'll change that.
Well, I think some people might be like, you know, I purchased the deluxe and/or anniversary edition, and part of what I was getting for that as opposed to the standard edition was the soundtrack, so how dare you release it legally on YouTube right away? Well, first off, if that's your criticism, number one, you don't own it, that's their decision. And number two, like saying, well, in addition to not getting the main theme, like Scott was saying, go into your files and choose which one you want specifically rather than having to go through the whole
thing. There's two soundtracks. There's the OST, which everyone got, and then there's the 25th anniversary soundtrack, and that one is a lot smaller.
Yeah, then it's also not the same stuff.
Right. It's various themes from the different Civ games. So
And also, I mean, it's on YouTube, but you can't take it with you, per se. So having a local copy is still better than having it on YouTube.
Yes.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-218-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
The buzzing says in the chat, as an aside, if you want 1 gigabyte of your hard drive, you can untick the soundtrack and the DLC for Civ 6. That's true, but what were you doing with that 1 gigabyte anyway? I mean, really?
You got terabytes now, come on.
A whole 1 gigabyte?
Oh, back in my day,
40 megs was a lot.
It's true.
At one point, it really was.
Actually, in my day, I remember looking to compress... can I compress my mailbox? And I'm going to mention a piece of software that I haven't used in years, and I used Eudora for email, and I was like, oh man, this mailbox is taking up 50 megabytes. Are you kidding? I've only got a few hundred megabytes of hard drive space left. This is a problem. We just don't have those kind of conversations anymore. We're just a bunch of digital hoarders now, really.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you, technology, for enabling our digital hoarding.
Yeah, we're not as efficient and organized as we used to be. Thanks, Internet!
Back in Dan's day, there was no Internet.
Well, back in your day, back in my day, there wasn't either, so...
Yeah,
we didn't need to talk about that detail. That's fine.
I find it amusing that Imagine says that, seeing as how he's older than me. It's pretty funny.
Nope.
I also stopped aging at 27.
My first hard drive was...
I don't know how large the first hard drive I had was, actually.
First one we had when I was a teenager, it was 100 megabytes, and the guy would sell it to, I think the guy told me, all the space you'll ever need.
No.
So we're going to put that quote up there with 640K of memory? Is all we're going to do?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I remember way back when blowing through that whole memory. They're like, yeah, we used to just make RAM drives. Screw the hard drive. We used to make RAM drives out of memory.
That's become a problem with game design as well now, isn't it? It's like, man, we used to know the game was done when the memory was full. Now,
you're telling us the memory, something's wrong.
How else are we supposed to know when the game is done, man?
Oh, once upon a time, that was a reasonable indicator.
Yep. True. Still is for consoles.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
True. Kind of true. I remember that was a specific issue, Acro Civilization Revolution on the DS. It's like, how many save games can you have? Only 5. Why? Well, because there's no more room? Oh, well.
Yeah.
It's the DS. What do you expect?
Although, I gotta laugh, because it's pretty sad. I had to actually delete stuff on my PS4 yesterday to actually put a new game on. I actually ran into space with my PS4.
Well, now the question is, that stuff that you deleted, when was the last time you had accessed that?
Stuff didn't get deleted, so that's okay.
It's also weird today when you have games that come out and they limit you on how many saves you can have. That's just really weird to me. It's like, why do you do this?
Especially when that number of limited saves is 1.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
definitely not a technical decision.
While you die.
Well, there are some games that do it for gameplay reasons. You know, like you've got like your persistent games like Dark Souls and stuff where everything is autosave, but you can still have multiple profiles.
Wait, where games is like, this is your only save slot. Period.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No one else is allowed to play this game.
Yeah.
While you're playing the game, no one else may. Also, while you're playing the game, you can't play a different version of the game.
Right, you can't do any different choices. It's really restrictive.
Well, I'm fine with some of the restrictive ones where there's like, haha, if you play the game, you're basically playing Iron Man. I'm fine with that. That's the style. It's the whole, you can't play the game twice at the same time. Like, I'm thinking for games that aren't pure story.
Yes.
Where you can make, go alternate directions or do alternate things. It'd be weird, like Civ only having 1 save slot at a time. That would just be odd.
Oh, no, that's coming in Civilization 10. And then if you want a second save slot, that's that DLC.
Yeah.
Don't say nightmarish things, Dan. Don't do that.
Bad Dan.
Yeah, and in Canada, gas is going to stay under 60 cents a liter. Lols. What a nightmare that was. Or that would be if it was more than that. Oh, wait, we're living it. And that sound effect is right. Yep, that's exactly right. If you didn't open the door, then everything would be fine.
Door's been open. Pandora's box is open.
Pandora's box has been open for 10 years. That's how old the show is. I heard a reaction to that.
Must walk off.
Seriously, what does it mean?
Wait, you only have to walk off? You don't feel the need to run? Well, I haven't done a good enough job.
Yeah, Mackie's resigned to do it at this point.
I can leave now.
Yes, can we?
The quality of the
I don't know. You can, but may you, lol.
But not sufficiently.
Somebody right. Not me needs to do the outro.
If Jason doing the outro.
I think Jason's just figuring if I don't do the outro, then the show never ends.
Davis, what are you doing?
I'm just waiting for you all to embarrass yourselves anymore. All right, everyone. Thanks for
listening. Well, we're never going to stop.
That's not how we do that.
Thanks for listening to Polycast, episode 269. I'm Mega Bears Fan, along with Dan Q.
Sticky Fingers.
The Me and Team.
See you guys.
Mad Jin.
Hi, everybody.
Makalua.
How to resupply the liquor cabinet.
And Alpha Shard.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Now, I see your troops on my borders, but I can't do anything about it because I'm a human player. So carry on.
True.
It's just a scout, man.
Don't mind me, I'm just casing.
Just casing joint, man.
Can people hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can hear you.
Actually, I'll be right back. Heard that, too.
Yep.
Because it rang enough, I thought it was actually part of her voicemail. And I thought, wow, it's awfully specific, Mackie, in her voicemail, saying, I know I'm late, but... And I was like, oh, wait, no, it's actually Mackie. It's not pre-recorded. Because I wasn't saying anything for, like, 7-8 seconds. I didn't hear hello, so I'm just like, oh, okay.
I know I'm late. She's answers not the first thing she says.
Buzzing's in our chat.
Fuzzy's listening.
Fuzzerton. How do you know Fuzzy's listening?
Yay! Hi, Fuzzy!
There's no answer to your question, Dan.
Get right. I know. It's just, I guess Dan's on ignored now. Oh, dear. Well, surprised it took this long, really. I don't see anything from Fuzzy in the Skype chat, and I don't see anything in, like, a Polycraft or Turncast chat, so I don't know how Scott knows this.
You just told me he was listening.
No, buzzing.
Buzzing? I don't hear any buzzing.
No, the user... I love the blooper material we got already. No, the username is The Buzzing.
Who's on first?
What? Oh, I don't know who Buzzing is. No, I thought you were talking about
Buzzing
Andrew.
And you're Fuzzy. Wow.
I thought you meant Andrew Fuzzy.
No, I mean, sometimes buzzing leads to less fuzzy, but, you know,
okay.
That's...
I'm sorry then, I didn't. Clearly.
Crap.
Record date, November 12th, 2016. Sid Meier interview clips, courtesy Eurogamer. Civilization 4, 5, 6, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.